Welcome to Hollywood Hookups and Breakups on today's show. Oh, we have a really exciting show for you today. Lindsay Lohan is off the wagon. What does that mean for her legally? We're going to go inside Jerry Hall and Rupert Murdoch's engagement. If you haven't heard, yes, those two are engaged. And Nick Cannon makes a bold statement about marriage. I can't wait to hear what Vicky has to say about that. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Cooper Lawrence, with my co-host, attorney Vicky Ziegler, star of the hit TV show Untying the Knot on Bravo, which I think everybody is watching. People are talking about your show constantly, and it's so funny about me. Like, I need to be the obnoxious person in the room who's the name dropper. So I was like, the other day, I was at a luncheon, and these girls were like, oh, do you watch Untying the Knot? Yeah, well, the other day, there's this guy who, and I was like,
really?
I was like, I know Vicky Ziegler. And they were like, right.
You're right.
I'm like, no. And not only do I know her, I have a podcast with her. Like, she's a friend of mine. And they were like, oh, you're such a name dropper. I'm like, no, it's like, go Google it.
That's so cute. I mean, I hear these stories and I laugh. I'm like, who is that? My twin sister? Like, I can't, it doesn't process. Like, it's just me. I'm a girl from Jersey. You know, I'm just trying to, you know, educate, help people. I love TV. I love radio. I love doing this with you. So I love that. I get excited when I hear it. But, you know, it makes me more humble and really grateful.
What's going on the show lately? Like, if people have not been watching it, why should they? Like, what's happening on the show that people need to tune in before the season's over?
Yes. We only have a few weeks left. And I think what it is, if you're happily married, that's fantastic, but you never know what the future holds. So you really should be watching to see what could go down and how people value their assets and what happens in the event that people actually are going to get divorced. And you can mediate with options. We also, you know, people are learning about sperm contracts and egg fertility freezing and why it's important to go to a lawyer to look at these contracts. You know, these are young people, these are gay couples. So for me, that's so important. And really, prenups and why they're so important. People talk about the cliche, like, oh God, prenups are so unromantic. But I talk about why they're so necessary. And we're going to talk about some awesome, very high-end celebrity gossip stories. And that's, some of these people are so in need of one that it's crazy. And they can save marriages. They can also save a lot of money in the event of a divorce.
Now, where we last left Lindsay Lohan is that she was supposed to be on some program. She's not supposed to be drinking. She was doing everything she could to avoid jail. She got community service. And she left telling the judge that she was going to basically be a good girl. And then she took off for London.
Right.
And she did a play that got terrible reviews. She did Speed the Plow. People hated her in it. And I follow her on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And every time I see her, she's in a bar.
Right.
She's at a party. So I know that when you're an alcoholic, allegedly, because she's not admitting to anything, of course, if you're allegedly an alcoholic, going back to the same patterns, being around the same people, being in those environments, it's too tempting unless you've dealt with the real core issues. And even then, it's like, you know, if I know that a guy is bad for me, I have to stop going to his place of business and seeing him there.
Right.
So it's the same kind of thing. Like, alcohol is a bad boyfriend for her, and yet she keeps, like, stalking him. So you want to say what the latest story is on her? Yeah, this is shocking.
Crazy.
I mean, even for her, I think it's shocking.
Yep. So basically, Lindsay Lohan has alleged to be, she was actually in a bar in New York, and a bartender had claimed that she and her sister were asked to leave on a Friday night after they came in. They didn't order a drink and spent 20 minutes in the bathroom, which is so weird, while refusing to come out. Then apparently Lindsay got heated and made a serious remark, probably rising to the level of being racist, to the bartender, including, quote, "This is New York. You're not from around here." Then she kept asking him if he was from Ghana in a mock African accent.
Ugh.
What is that about? I mean, disrespect? Then another customer tried to cool her down. She spat in his face.
What?
This can't be true.
What?
Is
no,
it true?
I think it's definitely true because it's Lindsay Lohan. If it was anyone else, like if you told me this about, I don't know, Claire Danes, I'd say, nah, this is ridiculous. But Lindsay Lohan, I don't put very much past her because, you know, remember, she's the one who crashed a car and then got out of the driver's seat, let her assistant get in the driver's seat. They saw them switching seats.
It
and she was
me.
Like, I wasn't even driving.
Then, by the way, another witness, after she eventually left, she was was pounding on the window and pressed her face against the glass. I mean, obviously she wasn't sober. And right. honestly, Lindsay hasn't commented yet, but this is what has been reported with respect to what witnesses saw and a bartender physically being there at the bar. And this doesn't bode well for her probation. She had strict rules that she had to comply with for her not to go back to jail, not to face any more jail time. And this could be a serious downfall again of hers, which we've seen her, and we always want to bring people up, but come on, you know what? Stay out of bars. Get away from other people if they're going to impact your life. Do good things. You know, focus on work. And I thought that's what she was going to do.
I think if you're in a bathroom in a bar for 20 minutes or more with a group of girls, you're up to no good in there.
Bad scene. Yeah. You know what? You want to, girls that stay together, pee together. I get that. You want to put your makeup on and fluff up your hair and you're Lindsay Lohan. That's great because people are taking selfies and pictures of you. However, 20 minutes, you're either doing something seriously illegal in there.
Right.
It wasn't a man, so we can't say she was having sex or doing anything like that. So I agree with you. I think something was going awry in there. I don't know what the attitude was when she came out and why she was being rude to people. It just, you know, I don't care who you are. There's no need for it.
Right. I mean, if she was getting sick in there, if she had like the big D or she was really whatever, she'd come out and she would say, "I'm sick, moron, leave me alone." But she didn't. She came out in a rage and in a racist rage, frankly, mm-hmm. and then started like acting really bizarre. I mean, the whole pressing her face against the glass mm-hmm. and just spitting in someone's face, the aggression.
Right.
You know?
Disrespectful, out of
right.
control behavior. Again, a la Lindsay Lohan circa 2 years ago that we
right.
saw. And no one wanted to rear this ugly head again. Nobody wants to see this. They want to see her be professional. She's a good actress when she is focused, and she can make a lot of money. I don't know what she's doing. She's a wild child that, you know, goes off the deep end, and somehow it's always about her doing something negative. And we all, why is this necessary?
Right. Now, what about legally? Because she is on probation, and she did give that big, beautiful speech about how she's going to be sober and clean and all that stuff. So it's one thing to take a little slide back. You know, you're at home, you have some wine with some friends. Mm-hmm. But she likes, by the time you're drinking publicly and you're making an ass out of yourself in a bar with your sister and your friends, this has gone too far, right? So what does this mean legally?
Right. The question is, has she violated probation? The question is, if she did spit in somebody's face and they say that this was an assault and they've pressed charges against her, it's a whole new ballgame. This could negatively impact her probation. It could send her to jail. Again, we have to take a hard look at what the terms of probation were. And I was following this case for many, many months on many news outlets. And I know that her terms of probation were very strict, and she had to stay out of trouble. She had the community service, and she had to be focused on work, get permission to travel, those kinds of things. So whether or not that's lifted or not, we'll have to see. And if, in fact, anybody does file any charges against her, because remember, spitting is an act of an assault. It's actually a bodily fluid that's coming from one person to another that hits
right.
somebody.
Mm.
And because they're being touched, an unwanted touching, that's an assault.
Right. Whether it's with your fist or your spit, it's still...
A car, spit, fist, anything.
Yeah, a car I could see.
Right. No, but people don't understand.
Yeah,
spitting,
no.
throwing something at them. I've
right.
had incidents where people throw remote controls at somebody else. That's an assault.
Wow.
Yeah, spitting is actually more common than we'd like to know. And even on Vanderpump Rules a few weeks ago, I know that James had spat on the door of Kristen, and I don't know if you watch it, but it was pretty disgusting. And if it hit her, she could have filed charges against him.
I think spitting on somebody is really, like, that's, I get angry and I do stuff like I throw the remote, like you just mm-hmm. said that, and I just, like, recoil, so I'm like, oh my God.
I saw you.
I'm a remote thrower. That's who I am. Look, what are you going to do? But I never would think to spit on somebody. I don't know whether because I think it's just so base and so lowly. I don't know. There's something about
terrible.
Spitting
right.
that feels really...
It's a bottom feeder behavior.
Yes, yeah, it does feel like that.
It's icky. Nothing should come out of your mouth unwanted against anybody else.
Right.
It's a different thing. In the privacy of your own bedroom, whatever you want to do consensually, go do it.
Mm.
Fantastic. Keep more marriages alive. At the end of the day, that's fine. But, you know, what somebody else, I don't think it's appropriate. You know, I have a little addiction. I'm going to admit to you that I watch Cops a lot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't know. My husband and I, we just love it. It's kind of like, nothing's on. Let's watch Cops. Let's see what's going on. How do you deal with people? And what are they doing? And they spit a lot.
Really?
Yes, the inmates do that. A lot of the officers and a lot of the people that work in these jails, unfortunately, to get their attention, you know, to be aggressive. And it's terrible. And they do other things. They throw fecal matter and really disgusting things. But I'm always intrigued why people would do that.
I mean, is it because once you're an inmate, you have no weapons? So all you have is your spit.
You have spit, right? Well, they make shanks. They make all different types of weapons. It's quite unbelievable what they can do from literally nothing. And I think it's just, I think it's negative attention. It's trying to get back at some of these, you know, the employees of the jail for no reason. So I don't know. I'm always intrigued about that. But yeah, I definitely think there's no room for spitting on anyone ever, ever. And I'm hoping that this story isn't true, but we believe that it likely will be come to fruition that it's true.
I think the bigger news here, and you might be bearing the lead, is that you watch Cops. I find that fascinating because, you know, I watch a lot of those shows. I really love Discovery ID. That's my channel. Mm-hmm. And I've made no secret of it. I don't know why I would. I'm proud of it. There's a lot of shows on there that I find really interesting, like Joe Kenda, Homicide Hunter.
Yes.
Fascinating watching how he goes about figuring out who the perp is and then the suspect and then, you know, whatever, getting him arrested. And then when he sits in the, when he has to go to trial and he's got to sit there and testify and the things that he says and how honest he is. And he's just fascinating. I like a lot of those shows. I find Cops to be very, it's like watching Jerry Springer for me.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm surprised that you enjoy that show because to me that feels very, like you said, lowly. Mm-hmm. What is it about Cops that you enjoy? Like what part of it?
Right. Well, I think I'm always learning. I love shows that teach me about human behavior. So for me, I'm shocked at the way people, I think, live their lives and the things that they do in terms of criminality and how they get caught and what they say to try to get out of it. A lot of them lie and, hey, was it me? Kind of like they throw the coke out the window. And it was like, what are you talking about? I'm fascinated because I was always in this little bubble of the way I grew up and thought everyone's honest. And so for me, I think I never saw that growing up. So I'm very intrigued by it. And Intervention's my other kind of secret addiction. And that show for me teaches me, I think, how people can go from like a great life to a horrible life and vice versa and how to bring them up.
And it's all within their control and some level.
Right. And I also think they always have an event, a negative event that impacts their lives and they can't cope with it and they don't know how to cure it. So they band-aid it by alcohol and drugs and what the families go through. And I always want to see a good storyline ending and I hope that they work themselves out and sometimes they don't. But I think it's interesting for me to see other people's lives. It's not that I'm not rooting for a train. I'm not that kind of person.
Right.
I like to kind of see the family dynamic and how there's a solution because I like to solve people's problems, obviously, as a divorce attorney.
What those shows have in common is that they're actual people. Mm-hmm. A lot of what goes on Discovery ID are reenactments.
Mm-hmm. I don't love a reenactment, by the way.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's the thing about it that I don't care for sometimes. I don't, you know, the actor playing the role of the boyfriend who's beating the girl and, you know, and sometimes it's, you don't get the best actors. Mm-hmm. So they're like, you know, the guy's like smiling while he's beating her. And it's like, no, if you're beating somebody, you're supposed to be angry.
Don't
smile and beat her like, I'm going to beat her now. Because the script says so.
Right. There's a fake aspect to it that to me, I lose my attention span's gone. Yes, I do like to see people in the raw and the buff and see what's happening. And sometimes, when they're on a drug-induced like PCP or whatever and they're like going crazy, I find that sad. Mm-hmm. But I also find it interesting. So, yeah, and I think it's very strange and no one would ever know, but my husband and I, that's all we do. We're like, nothing's on tonight. Let's throw on Cops.
Did you ever consider criminal law?
You know, I never did. I was always that person that, you know, I'm always about do right. And if somebody I think did something illegal or is guilty, I don't know if I could defend them. Mm. I'm not sure I feel the same way now as I did when I got into law, quite frankly. I love the legal gymnastics of trying to help people. And sometimes you have to maneuver the law as a divorce attorney. So I'm not opposed to it. I just didn't really focus on it in my career, my studies when I was in law school.
I'm so fascinated now by this. Do you have to cite references the same way if you're doing a criminal case, you have to say, well, in Jason versus Alan, you know, this is what happened.
Right.
Do you do that in divorce court?
Yes. Yes, we do as well. We have case law. We have rules of evidence that we have to abide by just as the criminal code does as well. They have sentencing guidelines. We don't have that because nobody's going to jail most of the time in divorce court. But yes, we have cases. There's, seminal cases that we deal with all the time, mm-hmm. and all the cases that are coming out in the appellate division. Absolutely, we have to be very knowledgeable about it, and it's fleeting. There's always changing cases and how people look at alimony and the alimony reform statute. So we always have to be cognizant and up to date on all of that.
So there's always precedent being set.
Always. And that's something we all as lawyers want to do. You know, we want to set precedent. We want to have a court look at a case in a different fashion from our bird's eye view. And perhaps they made a mistake that we think should be corrected. So, yeah, we have the same concept and construct. It's just obviously divorce versus criminal law.
Now, I've mentioned this before. As part of my PhD at Fordham, mm-hmm. my minor was forensic psychology, and I took a lot of classes at Fordham Law. Uh-huh. And we took a lot of classes learning about Daubert hearings mm-hmm. and that whole concept. If you don't know, it's like if somebody wants to present a new science, then you have to have a Daubert hearing, or mm-hmm. the other side can call for a Daubert hearing mm-hmm. where experts have to come and testify, yes, this is legitimate science, it's empirical, it's robust, mm-hmm. it's accepted by the community, by the peer journals, whatever, and you have to go and prove that. I don't think a lot of people call for Daubert hearings all that often, because it seems like the kind of thing that it's more conceptual. It's established enough. But mm-hmm. once in a while, you do hear about it, you mm-hmm. read about it, and it's fascinating. Does that ever happen in divorce court? Are there scientists that have to come and present evidence, and then someone goes, I don't think that evidence is true?
Like, no.
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 Okay.
No, not in divorce court. More, we have experts such as accountants. We have custody experts. We have people that we have to obviously get into the courtroom and make sure that they are qualified experts. But it's more about the children. It's more about money and finance. Mm-hmm. We have psychiatrists and psychologists that come in, best interest tests for the children, unfit parents, those kinds of things. But we don't have scientific, because we're not dealing with forensic evidence.
Right.
That's the difference.
Oh, okay.
We're dealing with forensics as it relates to money and businesses and buildings and those kinds of things, but not necessarily ballistics. And that's why the science comes in. And you'd be much more interested, obviously, in the criminal aspects for, you know, you as a psych, and you, I think, having that expertise in research. And I know you like the criminal side, but the divorce law is not as exciting in that regard, unfortunately.
I'm sure you have forensic accountants. That's exciting.
Yeah, we do. But it's all about money. You know, the forensic side for children in custody, I know you'd be very interested in.
Ooh.
Yeah,
okay,
that side. Definitely.
Okay, cool. Okay, now I also want to ask you about, I'm fascinated by this as well.
South African cops. That's all I have
to say. Yeah, I know. So far, the two most fascinating. You were born in South Africa and you watch Cops. Like, this is, I love
Well, you're 96-pound puppy.
Yeah.
I think I love most about you, that you love skulls, because I know that the skull and crossbone thing is what you're interested in. Mm-hmm. That fascinates me.
I'm such a dumbass compared to you.
Now get out of here.
Now, I just want to talk to you about Jeri Hall announcing her engagement this week, or last week, I guess it'll be at this point because we're recording this a week early, to Rupert Murdoch.
Wowzer. Did you see that coming?
Well, I had read on Twitter a while back, somebody said that they had gone to some kind of award ceremony. They'd seen them somewhere, some mm-hmm. luncheon or whatever, and it seemed like they were together. And then at the Golden Globes, they were together.
Mm-hmm.
And all over Twitter, people were like, was Jeri Hall holding hands with Rupert Murdoch?
Right.
And it seemed preposterous. It seemed like, is she his nurse now? Is she like walking him into things so she doesn't bump into stuff? Like, but no, they're a couple. They're allegedly in love. And they announced that they are going to get engaged. He is 84.
Right. So let's talk to a divorce attorney. That would be me.
Yes.
And I'm not a Debbie Downer, and I'm rooting for love all the time. But there's a 25-year age difference. She's 59. He's 84, as you just mentioned. So to me, I'm not really that great in math, but that looks like 25 years. I think Rupert Murdoch has been divorced 4 times, and
right.
I think Jeri 2 times.
Mm-hmm.
So together, that's 6. Now, divorce rates go up after first-time marriages. So people need to really understand that. While I have all the hope in the world, and I know that I think Murdoch has a family.
Wait,
I don't know.
So if you've been divorced once, you're more likely to get divorced again?
Correct. Yes, recidivism in terms of people getting married, making the same mistakes, rebounding, not changing their behaviors and attracting the same type of people.
Mm.
So I think about 49% for first-time marriage is the failure rate. 62% get divorced the second, and 73% the third.
Why?
I'm telling you why. The people do the same mistake. It's like, listen, you broke up with your honey tomorrow, you're going to attract the same type of guy unless you do some work on yourself. Right. Why did it go wrong? And people don't. It's just easier to rebound and get back into a relationship. And it's not about me. It's all your fault. And unfortunately, it takes two to tango. And people have to work on themselves, and they don't. And I think that's probably most of the problem.
But I take myself out of this equation because while I'm very close with my ex-husband, mm-hmm. we got married for all the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the right, if it was a resume, you would look at the resume and say, I'm not going to give you this job. Like, we shouldn't have been married. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't have gotten married, that's for sure. The boyfriend I'm with now, it's a whole different ball game. He's amazing. People, it's the opposite. People are like, you two should be married.
Right, but you learned your mistake. You learned from the first marriage you shouldn't have gotten married. So that probably was like a starter marriage and a test marriage. And Right. Now you really attracted someone more suitable for you. So I think you're an anomaly. I think we have to kind of ostracize you from the equation.
So I'll be in the 38% rather than the 62%.
You got it. Okay. And then I think they say 5% of people that are actually married are happy. So that's another statistic that I find fascinating.
5%?
That's frightening. Yes, 5% of the people that remain married are happy. So 95% of the people that are actually in the category of the 38%, let's say for the second time, mm-hmm. are unhappy. Or sorry, are 5% of those people are happy. So I guess the memo is that we have to, number one, do some premarital planning, attract the people that actually are not our parents in a past life, that are actually good for us, not just because they're good looking or they have money. You actually want to have a best friend and do things that you have in common and actually want to laugh a lot with somebody and then be attracted to them and then work on it. When things go wrong, not hide, be an ostrich, a head in the sand, but actually focus on the issues so that you can continue. Because once you have children and all these things bubble up, life gets difficult and complicated. Mm. And people don't talk about these things. They just think that everything should be perfect, and they're not. So work on them. And I know everyone wants to be happy, but I don't know how they don't know the road to pave to be happy.
You seem happy in your marriage.
I'm so happy. I've never been happier in my life today. Forget about my daughter who's made my life. Mm-hmm. My husband has given me something that I never actually had. It's this complete family. I feel like a family unit, and it's our family, and we do what we want. And right. I always kind of lived by everyone else's rules, and you know, always was placating to everybody, and then you know, saying, oh yes, and it's great, and I have a great guy. But no, it's us. Right. It's not just him and my, you know, our parents. It's not like that. So for me, that's important. I feel like a sense of calm and peace knowing that. And we're best friends, and you can't penetrate Right. two people that are best friends.
Right.
You can fight, you can love, you can laugh, but at the end of the day, it's like Bonnie and Clyde. You have each other's back no matter what. And right. when you have that compatibility, it doesn't matter. You can have 10% of your time together can be bad, but 90% can be amazing.
We're very happy.
And I want to know why you're so happy.
We're very happy. Well, probably because we don't have children. And my boyfriend is somebody who, in general, in his life is just usually not happy. So he's as happy as he could possibly be with me. Like, he was miserable alone. So he's less miserable with me.
So he's content with you and happy. That's so funny. But what do you do? What does he do for you?
We just are really there for each other for everything. Like, we really trust each other. There's a lot of it. He's like my advisor, you know, if anything goes on in my life. Like, there was a point for many years where if anything happened, I always called my mother. I never called my husband. I called my mother. Now I don't need her anymore because I have him. I trust him. So he's very good at advising me and inspiring me. On days that I walk in, I feel like really crappy, or if I feel fat, like, he makes me feel beautiful and wanted and amazing all the time.
That's such a huge quality.
And he'll always say, like, I'm so lucky to have you. And I'm like, no, I'm the lucky one. He's like, no, I'm the lucky one. Like, we have, people hate us because they're like, oh, yes, you're both lucky.
But that's cute, because I think a lot of people don't get that at home.
And we're very touchy-feely. I noticed this when I was my last relationship, my marriage. Whenever my ex-husband and I got together with this couple friend of ours, Saul and Liz, who were always, I thought, really happy, still very happy together. They have a kid. Saul and Liz were always, like, all over each other. They had to, like, be touching or sitting next to each other or arms around each other or that kind of thing. And I thought, oh, they're so cute. And I noticed that wasn't true for my husband and I. Like, we'd sit on opposite ends of the couch. He would be standing when I'd be sitting. We were never affectionate. You know, like we never held hands. We just sort of like were in a room together.
But you're very affectionate in generally speaking, or is it just because you need the right person to be affectionate?
I need the right person because when I'm with my boyfriend, like we don't walk down the street unless he always takes my hand to hold my hand, or he'll put his arm around me. Mm-hmm. Or if we're like at a party or at a sitting on a couch at a friend's house, like he always has to touch me in some way. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, we're Saul and Liz now. That's so good.
But you know, it's important. I think it's a very valid point that a lot of people lose that intimacy. And that to me is intimate. You don't have to be having sex to be intimate, to touch, to, you know, really understand that there's a connection between the two of you that's impenetrable. And I think when you lose that and people go for weeks and weeks and don't have sex and don't hold hands and don't touch, you lose that connection. Mm-hmm. And it's a small part, but I think it's a very important part. And I work at that all the time because I'm so busy and I run home and I have to see my dog and my baby and I have to give my husband attention and I have to talk to the nanny and I have to talk to my mom and I have to talk to my dad. And, you know, there's so many things and I'm working and I try to do everything for everybody. And I always have to remind myself, you know, you have to spend time alone. Like I shut the door. It's like my husband's time because it's important for us to do that. Otherwise, you know what? You can lose it.
And do you find this? I find that he's very proud of me. Like I hear him telling other people about me and she did this and she did that and this is happening and she got this phone call and make sure you watch her on this. And
how does that make you feel?
It's adorable. Yeah. It's so cute. It's like, it reminds me of how integrated our lives are, that it's more than just, it feels like we are a couple like that because things that I do impact him and he's proud of me and happy for me.
Which is awesome. And I think that's so solid. And that shows that he has self-esteem because he can make you that limelight. You know, you could be the person that everyone knows is the star. And not to say that he's not, but in his own right, whatever he does in his career. So I think that's part of it. And he should be proud of you because you're kicking ass and taking names and doing amazing. And I think that's a fabulous quality.
So is all this conversation we just had, were you implying with with Jerry Hall and Rupert Murdoch, do you think because of their track record that it's likely they're not going to be married long?
I think they should have a long engagement and perhaps never get married. Hmm. I'm not sure what the point is at this stage when they have, you know, Murdoch has a family, has children. You have to do estate planning. There has to be a prenup.
Right.
I mean, there has to. There's a heavy net worth here. We're talking about
billions,
almost in the billion
no,
range.
No, billions. He's a billionaire.
Is he 10? I think he may be. I don't know what he's worth. 10 billion. But I'm talking on Jerry Hall's side. She's could be worth 30 million. So there's a lot to protect here. When you have other children from different relationships, you have to be very smart in estate plan, and then they get a house together, and who's supporting who, and it gets very complicated.
Well, you know that he is lawyered up to the teeth.
Right, but if you get engaged and you have separate houses, but you can live together or travel together, you don't have to do any of that. You don't have to get a prenup. You can get a cohabitation agreement, but you don't even need it. If everything's in his name and he'll give her gifts, then why get married? What's the point? I understand it's nice to get married, but when you're 84 years old, isn't it nice to just have a companion?
She still has Mick Jagger money.
Oh, she's got Boku money, but so what? Murdoch's a billionaire.
So that's what I want to know.
A different level.
Yeah, that's what I want to ask you. So to me, there's no difference between a millionaire and a billionaire because what more do you need? You
know
what I mean?
Lots. Like,
okay, so what is the difference? I mean, I do see on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills that there is
you're so cute.
That Erica Jane has two planes. Mm-hmm. There's a big plane and a little plane,
right?
Because her husband is some big attorney,
right?
So what? Everybody else has a house and money, and they don't have to worry about money the rest of their lives.
Like, it's a level of lifestyle. That's all we're talking about. So are you going in your own plane? Are you going in a private plane that you're renting? Are you buying, you know, Hermes sheets? Or are you just going, you know, and getting general sheets? I mean, again, are you having food
What's
delivered? Do you have a chef? It's just a higher level.
You're not starving. Your kids are cared for. You'll always have a roof over your head.
Right. This is rich or richer. This is the life of the rich and famous. So whether you have 20 million in the bank, you're not living like Rupert Murdoch. I'm sorry, you're just not. Everything is done for you. You can go to the gym and someone can kick your shoes for you and, you know, pound weights for you. You know, you're being driven everywhere. You're being escorted everywhere. Everything that you wear is tailored with your initials. It's just a different ballgame. It's a different level. Most people, less than 1% of the population in the world, can say that they have that much money and they can do anything they want and buy anything.
Well, when I win Powerball, I'll have that kind of money.
Ooh, you got to share.
I'll tell you what's awful about this podcast. We're recording it. It before Powerball.
Oh my God! So I may never see you again.
Somebody might have won, and it may be one of us.
Oh my God!
So it's a week later. So you guys all know what happened.
Okay,
with Powerball.
So listen, I'll be generous to you, and every person that's ever downloaded our podcast will get something from me. How's that? If I win this Powerball,
not me. I want Murdoch money. I want my own Murdoch money. And finally, we wanted to bring up Nick Cannon. Yeah. I think this is so interesting. He says that he's done with marriage. Now, he was married, as you know, to Mariah Carey for over 6 years. He's single now. And even though he's only 35, he said that he highly doubts he's ever going to get married again because he probably heard these statistics from Vicky Ziegler.
He probably.
So he says, here's his quote. He said, "I feel like marriage is not for everyone. A friend of mine put it the funniest way. He said, if you heard that there was a 50-50 chance of living or dying when you jump out of a plane, you probably wouldn't go skydiving." Now, the thing is, it's not 50-50, really. I mean, it's not 50% of marriages don't break up. That's an old number. It's
it's in the 40s.
The research doesn't. Yeah, it's right now it's 43 for a certain age. Right. But as you get older, that number gets younger. Mm-hmm. Gets lower. Mm-hmm. So if you get married in your 30s plus, it's down to, like, I think the last number I saw was like a 28% chance of getting divorced within the first 5 years or something like that.
Right, they break it down.
Yeah, they break it down. So it seems like the older you are, the less likely you'll get divorced. And I think it also matters whether you've been married before. Mm-hmm. So what do you think of his statement? Do you think the idea moving forward with him, someone like him, he's 35, is it a good idea to never get married again?
Well, first of all, I think he's going to get married again. I think that he is coming out of a very tough divorce with Mariah Carey, and probably a lot went on between them during the marriage that we haven't heard of yet. So he also got married when he was young, in his late 20s, and he married someone that was 11 years older, different lifestyles, different backgrounds. So I think he's jaded, and I understand that. I think if he ever does get married again, he has to be smarter about the planning. I know there was a prenup, and I'm sure he got shafted because Mariah had much more money than he did.
God, yeah.
Tons and tons more.
She had Ty Mottola's money.
Yep,
and then she had her own money.
Right. She's swimming in it. I mean, have you seen Cribs? I mean, have you seen her apartment in New York? Hello? And her shoe collection. So I think, and she's a diva. So I think that he should take a break from ever getting married quickly again. And I think, because I think they met on a video shoot and they got married pretty quickly, dated and that kind of thing. So I think you get to know somebody and do some smart premarital planning and date and have fun. I think he has two children, so that may not be the push, but I definitely think he probably will get married. But guess what? If he doesn't ever get married, who cares? Fantastic. Right. What's the pressure of getting married again? He's a target. All these women want to date him. I think he dated Kim Kardashian, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know what? There's no rush to get remarried. I don't think he means what he says. I think he's in it now and feels that way, but I think he'll probably walk down the aisle again.
Yeah, I mean, if he ends up with somebody younger who wants kids, they may not want to be with him unless he's willing to make the ultimate commitment to have children and give the kids a name and work all that stuff out that you always talk about.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I think right now, when you're jaded and you get you come out of a very tough marriage, I can see everyone saying, I'll never get divorced again and never get married again. And guess what? Everyone says that to me. And I'd say 9 out of 10 times, they do get married again.
Well, I think you made a very good point about him not rushing into it the second time, because the latest research on how long you should be together before you get married, they're saying if you're together 2 years to 2 years and 4 months, that seems to be the sweet spot. So if you're together 2 years, 2 years of four, to 2 years and 4 months, you're less likely to get divorced.
I believe that. And I think after a year and a half, somebody's true colors really come out and you get to know them. I think before that, you really don't know a person. I feel like it takes time for them to be open and communicative and really show their flaws, because we all have them.
You're flawless. Perfect and flawless over there. All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for listening to Hollywood Hookups and Breakups with Cooper and Vicky. Email us your thoughts and questions at HollywoodHookupsBreakups@gmail.com. Thank you to Blog Talk Radio, to our producers Anthony, Dennis, and Eric. I'm on Twitter at Cooper Lawrence. Follow Vicky at Vicky Ziegler. Find us on Instagram and Facebook. Watch Untying the Knot on Bravo Mondays at 10. Vicky and I are back next week with another exciting episode of Hollywood Hookups and Breakups. Thank you so much for downloading. Bye-bye.